Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast with yours truly, Simone. I'm excited for episode 3. This is where I want to speak a little bit more about who you see if you think you have Nutcracker. Maybe you have already been diagnosed with Nutcracker Syndrome, and you are going crazy because you're not sure what some of the next steps are. So maybe this can provide some insight to you all on next steps. So from the previous episode, as a quick recap, I went over kind of common signs and symptoms of Nutcracker. And at this point, if you haven't already been diagnosed, you might be wondering, again, how to go through the proper channels to get diagnosed. So I'm hoping that my lived experience can give some insight into that. So let's just jump right into it. For me, as I stated in my in episode 2, my Nutcracker journey started when my gynecologist referred me to an interventional radiologist. That was because Dr. Muldoon is amazing at having an interdisciplinary approach, and that's something really important to ask the doctors that you're talking with, that you're going to see, if you do, and I am going to say have the privilege, because some people don't have the privilege to be able to shop around for doctors, maybe based on your insurance, or lack thereof of insurance. So, but one of the questions I do like to ask is their interdisciplinary approach, how they're to just see, like, are you just looking at this particular symptom, or are you aware of the entire body? So my gynecologist referred me to an interventional radiologist, but you can go to your primary care doctor and ask them, tell them that you're suspecting Nutcracker syndrome. Just a heads up, they're probably going to do what my primary care doctor did and say, I think I remember learning about that in medical school, but I had to refresh his memory. I had to show him the scans, basically educate him. He is wonderful, though, Dr. Ryan Thompson in Littleton, Colorado, because he has been very open to, he's never downplayed anything just because he didn't have a patient that ever had Nutcracker. So ask your primary care doctor about a referral if the referral is needed to an interventional radiologist. What you could do is, I highly suggest if you want to do your own research, maybe get on the Facebook support group. You can get on the subreddit, Nutcracker subreddit, and see maybe if there is a person that people refer to, an interventional radiologist in your respective area, and then go ahead and be prepared when you go into your primary care doctor appointment to say, can I get a specific referral to this person's office? Because they might not even have a kind of general referral. So I learned that on my path is to just go in ready to ask for specifically what you want. But also, you might not even need a referral. I had some, like for Dr. Foley, my kidney auto transplant surgeon, their UW Health Renal Auto Transplant Program did not require a referral from a doctor. You could do self-referral via their website. So if you find somebody that you want, you can call the office if their website doesn't show and say, hey, do you all require a referral? If so, you can acquire that from your primary care doctor. Let's say you don't have a primary care doctor. I remember talking to Dr. Muldoon, and she had some connections with some other kidney auto transplant surgeons. So she sent in referrals for me. So it doesn't always have to be from a primary care doc. Sometimes I'll go in, and if I'm working with somebody, I'd be like, do you feel comfortable sending in a referral for me on my behalf to this specific doctor? They could say no, but again, that's the worst they could say is no. So, again, see about what the requirements for, once you get the referral or if you don't need a referral. I called my interventional radiologist's office to say, what do you need for that initial consult? And so for me, I specifically sent in, I had a CT that was previously done at an ER, visit about a month prior to my initial consult. So I sent them those scans. I also had an MRI done as well of the abdomen. That actually ended up not really helping me at all. But if you don't have those scans, that's something that they can request during your initial consult. But go ahead and call prior, because again, you're trying to be efficient through this process. So efficiency to me is calling ahead saying, what do you need from me so that we can get the most out of the initial consult, rather than you showing up to the initial consult, finding out hey, we're going to order you a CT, and you say, oh, I've already had one done. And the nurse practitioner doctor could have already have looked at those scans for you and give you a diagnosis based on that scan that day versus having to wait. So again, you're just trying, this is a very arduous process in the timeline of events. Some of you all might know as you're listening to this. Help yourself out, call ahead of time, see what pre-work you can do, what scans you can send in. Maybe even ask, like, I call the interventional radiologist office and say, what scans do you all use to, like, in this order of operations? And they could say a CT or an MRI. You can work with your primary care to be getting those scans done prior to your initial consult and then sending it to the interventional radiologist office once the results come in. So this is kind of just how you play the system. I see a lot of people asking me those questions about what scans to get. And the first things first, call the interventional radiologist office and ask them, say, what scans do you all need? If the person that answers the phone doesn't know, ask if you can, they can leave a message for a medical individual to get back with you to give you those details. So the scans that I had, so once I got to my interventional radiologist initial consult, I was told that it looked like I had May-Thurner syndrome, which was inconclusive as far as the CT went. They couldn't 100% tell, but they said it very much looked like I had severe nutcracker syndrome. So that then led to them saying, you know what, we don't need to do the MRI. We're just going to jump straight to a venogram. I'll go into more details about a venogram in a later episode on what to expect from that procedure. It is considered the gold standard for diagnosing vascular compressions as it pertains to May-Thurner and nutcracker syndrome. So they ordered me the nutcracker syndrome, they ordered me the venogram to go and measure the May-Thurner and nutcracker. I decided, and this is a little bit of an unpopular opinion for some people, is to in the diagnostic venogram, and I mentioned this in a previous episode, you can just choose to do the diagnostic venogram. And if you did have May-Thurner, you could say, I don't want you to put the stent in just yet. I want to wake up from the diagnostic venogram, see where the cards fall, and then make my decision after. You can absolutely do that. A lot of my nutcracker syndrome friends, May-Thurner friends, have done that. I decided to do the diagnostic venogram and slip that dang stent in there in the initial venogram if my compression was significantly bad, of which it was. It was, I mean, almost fully closed. So it was at like a 88, 89% compression. So I did the venogram, the diagnostic venogram, got the measurements for May-Thurner, for nutcracker. Now, here's some things you need to know for nutcracker. If you already know, like, I went ahead and had a game plan in mind before my diagnostic venogram of what I wanted to do to treat nutcracker syndrome. I knew I wanted to go the transplant route. So I went ahead and called these transplant units, these renal kidney auto transplant programs, and said, hey, if I were to come to you, I was diagnosed with severe nutcracker, I'm about to have my venogram done, what are the measurements that you need on your side of things to give you all the data to move forward with possibly pursuing a kidney auto transplant with you? So that's another thing, again, being efficient, going ahead. To me, I was trying to be a couple steps forward, because even if I didn't pursue a kidney auto transplant and I found out my nutcracker wasn't as severe or I didn't need to treat it, I at least knew we were gathering all the data needed in the venogram in case I did need to pursue the route. So when I called UW Health, they were my kind of primary through all of this. They said they needed the percentage of the compression. So for my interventional radiologist to measure the vascular compression of the left renal vein, what was the percentage of the compression? What was the pressure gradient as they pulled the catheter from my left renal vein into the intervena cava? And then, are there vascular collaterals present? So that was the three things that I asked my interventional radiologist. I was like, when I wake up, I would like those three things. I really wanted to note this. Make sure that they have that listed on the consent form that you sign for the procedure. There have been people that have woken up, they go in thinking, okay, they're going to, you know, do all these measurements in my left iliac vein and my left renal vein, and then they wake up thinking they're going to get that data, and then the interventional radiologist doesn't actually measure any of it. They're not as detailed as possible. So I had my interventional radiologist write it on the informed consent form before I signed it, so that I was signing to say, this is what I want done. This is what we're agreeing upon. Thus, if you wake up and they don't actually have those measurements for you, then you have that informed consent to show this is what we agreed upon, and you are now held responsible for that. If it's not on the consent form, then there's not much you can do. Maybe there is. Maybe somebody listening to this is like, oh, no, there is. Please reach out. Let me know. But to my understanding, you need to have that in black and white. So those are the three things, the percentage of the compression, the pressure gradient, and the vascular collaterals that are created. You're trying to capture all three of those things. The collaterals might not be captured. That's okay. That means you either, maybe you don't have collaterals. Something about collaterals, I would say. I have known people who had no collaterals show up on any venogram they have, and they've had repeat venograms done, and then they went and got the kidney autotransplant to wake up to say, you had collaterals. You did. They just weren't captured by the venogram. Maybe the interventional radiologist didn't use as much dye. They didn't insert as much dye into the left renal vein to actually capture the network that was created. So I only had one faint little collateral show up in my spine. But when I woke up from my kidney autotransplant, I was told, if I remember correctly, that I didn't have the most severe collateral network that Dr. Volley had ever seen, but it was about middle ground. And in my surgery report, it did demonstrate that I did have a collateral system that had worked its way up into my chest, into my spine, and also kind of my side wall, peritoneal wall, which I thought was interesting. So a little thing there. A couple things as you are gathering. So I did my venogram. I went in, I was able to capture all the data that I needed. Once I had that done and the results were out and published on my patient portal, I took all of that and sent it over to all the transplant teams to say, here's all the data, add to my folder. If I decide to pursue a kidney autotransplant, and please present this to the Nutcracker team, have them look at it, and then they can tell me. Just so all you know, I woke up from my venogram being told that they placed the stent for Mathurner, and they were 100%, pretty confident. I shouldn't say 100%. They were very confident that my Nutcracker was actually not as severe as the CT showed in my initial consult. And I only had a 48% compression of the left renal vein and no significant pressure gradient as they pulled back from the left renal vein into the inner vena cava. So I was a little like dumbfounded by that because, again, I'm having left flank pain. I'm having blood protein in my urine. But I took it as a win. Take the wins where they come. I was like, cool. I'm not trying to have a plant transplant surgery here, people. So I got 2 good weeks out of the stent, and then all the Nutcracker symptoms started roaring back. So that's when I decided, I remember my interventional radiologist wrote down, like, if the symptoms pursue, then we'll pursue the Nutcracker route. So I did. That 2 week mark, I think that the symptoms happened that night, and the next morning on a Friday morning, I remember calling the transplant teams that I wanted to work with, UW Health, Dr. Zendejas in Salt Lake City. And then at that point, Dr. Pashak at UC Health was starting to open up his Nutcracker program again. So I called all of them and was like, what do I need to do to pursue? You know, I'd been like, I want to move forward with this. What do you need from me? Have you received these scans? And went from there. So that's another, like, call people. Every transplant team has different needs. So Dr. Zendejas out of Salt Lake, for example, requires the renal hyalur block procedure. I'll go into way more detail about the renal hyalur block in a later episode on what to expect from that procedure. So I decided, cool, I'm going to go ahead and start asking to get referrals to be able to get the renal hyalur block done in case I don't get accepted at UW Health and I need to go with Dr. Zendejas. So those are the things that I really encourage you to, like, get a notebook, have a page or whatever, Excel spreadsheet dedicated to each surgeon you want to see. What are the requirements for them to even take you in as a patient? What is their process of kind of pushing you through the system or process of elimination? How do they diagnose Nutcracker? What are their biggest things that they care about? Things of that nature. So after I did the venogram and I knew, okay, my symptoms are coming back, Nutcracker syndrome, I want to move forward with this. I knew after gathering such valuable data, especially from the Facebook group and the Nutcracker subreddit, is that I needed to rule out a couple things, rule in or out, as it was going to be very important information for me to gather. One of those was seeing a rheumatologist to either rule in or out if I had Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So EDS is a common comorbidity with these vascular compressions. So if you are listening to this now and you are not 100% sure or have not been clinically seen to either diagnose or not Ehlers-Danlos, go see a rheumatologist. Go ahead right now, figure out who you want to see, get a referral, and get on the books. Because as every single one of us know who've been on this journey, it could be months before you can be seen. So I went ahead even prior to, like, once I got diagnosed, it was probably a month later, I was like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and get this rheumatologist scheduled. And I'm so glad I did, because they were like 3 months out, and I was able to get squeezed in like right before I had my in-person with UW Health mid-November of 2024. So I went into the rheumatologist, they did the kind of basic breakdown of Ehlers-Danlos. We did all the testing and it turned out I did not have Ehlers-Danlos. So I just want to quickly say, I am so sorry to some of you, if not all of you listening to this right now, who do have Ehlers-Danlos. I have so much empathy for you in the journey that you have to take, how much harder life is, recovery is, pain is. So please do your due diligence in getting that diagnosed or not, because it's very important to tell doctors to go to a transplant surgeon and say, I do have Ehlers-Danlos. That is information that is really important for them to know so that they can properly treat you, right, with recovery. Recovery could be a little bit longer for you, so it's good for that surgeon to know that. Another thing, too, that I want to talk about, like with Mae Thurner, for example, but just in general, is to go get a referral to a doctor and allergist for them to test you to see if you are allergic to metals. So a little bit of a sidebar on the Mae Thurner syndrome side of things is that the stent that they use is metal, and if you are allergic to that, that can cause some problems. So it's good to do your due diligence. So if you decide, yeah, I want to do the venogram, the diagnostic venogram, and wake up and wait to make a decision on whether I want to put the stent in, talk to your interventional radiologist about getting that allergy testing for the metal. They can, my interventional radiologist offered to me that if I was allergic to metal, they could order another specific stent that is some other, made by something else, so it's not metal. So another thing is MCAs. So mast cell activation syndrome is another comorbidity here. I had some of this pop up during the worst part of my pain. I think I was just under so much stress. I have not had any type of mast cell activity since my kidney auto transplant. I really only had one episode where I broke out in hives, and that was when I think I just had this major breakthrough on what was to come. I think I was just in shock for a couple months, and then all of a sudden it just hit me out of nowhere, and somatically my body was like, I'm scared. So those are some things in the interim. So if you're, wherever you're at in the process, if you have not thought about seeing a rheumatologist, going to an allergist, getting these things tested, ruling in or out MCAs, metal allergy, EDS, I highly recommend getting those things done prior to any intervention that you choose to do. Whether that's getting a stent placed. So I've been talking about transplant heavily here as it pertains to the kidney auto transplant route I took to address my Nutcracker syndrome. But there are two other routes you can take that are not transplant related, that are just vascular surgeon related. And that pertains to a left renal vein transposition and stenting the left renal vein. I chose against those as they have a higher failure rate, and the stenting freaks me out, as there is a mortality rate associated with that. I just didn't want to mess with that. So something else to remember is a lot of these doctors are going to tell you, like, we have an 85% success rate on this particular surgery, left renal vein transposition, kidney autotransplant, whatever. I'm a researcher, okay? I'm a professor. So I'm always like, okay, what is the sample size of that? Also, and just remember this, folks, usually if something goes wrong with a doctor, you go find another doctor. So, like, with my first two botched gynecology surgeries that I had prior to finding Dr. Muldoon, I didn't ever, and I've been contemplating emailing her, trying to get in contact with her to say, hey, like, kind of an education thing of, I needed a kidney auto transplant. I didn't need, like, just widen your understanding. So in her eyes, she thinks that those surgeries were successful because I'm not circling back. She's never heard from me again. I just went and found another doctor. So they might be thinking, yeah, every time I do this surgery, it's successful. But it's because, like, when I went to Dr. Foley and even spoke to, like, a couple other people, they're like, we're constantly seeing people who had failed left renal vein transposition or stenting. And that doctor previous that did the surgery, who's actually telling them that it failed? So just keep that in mind when doctors start throwing out percentages to you. I get a little sus when people start throwing out percentages, just to be honest, especially doctors, when they're not going to sit there and show you the methodology in which brought them to that number. Because a lot of people don't know how to ask. That's a little bit of a side tangent. So once you rule in, so you got your venogram done, that's the gold standard. They measure your percentage of the compression of the left renal vein, you got your pressure gradients, and they captured any collaterals that could be there. You also go to either rule in or out Ehlers-Danlos syndrome through a rheumatologist. You go to an allergist to do allergy testing for metals, see if you have mast cell activation syndrome. So you gather up all these scans and notes, and you send those to the nutcracker surgeon that you want to view your scans. So for me, again, I chose the transplant route. I was looking at UC Health with Dr. Pashak, UW Health with Dr. Foley, and Dr. Zendejas, that's based out of Salt Lake. I forget what hospital he's associated with. I chose the transplant route for myself. Specifically the auto transplant. So figure out if you want to go the transplant route or the vascular surgeon route. So whether you want to donate your kidney or do an auto transplant, that's the transplant route, or the vascular surgeon route, that's the left renal vein transposition or the left renal vein stent. Again, like I said in the first introductory episode, my decision is my decision. I ask that you respect that. And I respect your decision. So go out there, meander through the Facebook group, see what people have to say about the left renal vein transposition, the left renal vein stent, donating, auto transplant, and make the decision that's right for you. And you know what that decision is. Take some time, get quiet with yourself, dig deep, and ask yourself, what do I feel like is right for me? And that's what the answer is, okay? And whether it does fail or not, that's okay. My kidney auto transplant could fail, and that doesn't mean that I didn't make the right decision for me at the time. That just means next step is I'm going to have to get rid of it. So, I just want to leave you with that. I hope that this episode was insightful for you. It gave you some more insights on things to think about. This is just my experience, of course, so make sure you're calling the doctor's offices and asking what they need. Don't just take the three things I told you to gather as kind of the final word. So with that, thank you so much for listening to this episode. In the next episode, we will be talking about kind of vetting doctors. I want to go into that a little bit more. Questions to ask them to help you better navigate the landscape, because especially if you're looking at a major surgery and you are getting multiple opinions, some of these questions could help you make or break the decision you make with a doctor. I've had it happen to me. So we'll be going into that. And then in later episodes, I'll go into more specific detail about the venogram, the renal hilar block, the auto transplant itself, etc. But before we jump into that and I let you go, I want to invite you, as always, wherever you are, Just take a nice deep breath in through your nose and slowly exhale, grounding yourself into this moment just a little bit more. And then another deep inhale through your nose and slowly exhale. And just keep with that flow at your own pace for as long as you would like, as you transition into maybe listening to the next episode or just going about your day. But whatever is next for you, I just want you to take a moment to really marinate in you showing up for yourself, in you trying to do right by yourself. And I know this medical system is so, so, so frustrating. I empathize with you. I'm here for you. I'm doing this podcast for you. So just give yourself a big hug. Give yourself some self-love. I'm so proud of you.